Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When it comes to pensions, performance counts. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Now, amid the ongoing war in Gaza, hospitals in particular are at the sharp end of the conflict. Dr. Nabil Rana is a vascular surgeon from Charlotte, North Carolina in the US, and he recently completed a month-long Med Global volunteer mission in Gaza in hospitals in Khan Yunis and Dar al-Bala. It was his second trip to Gaza after previous working in Dar al-Bala in the summer. And I'm delighted to say Dr. Nabil Rana joins me now on the line. Dr. Rana, you're very welcome to Drive Time.
Hi, Cormac. Thanks for having me.
I'm keen to know straight off the bat what kind of differences you noticed this time compared to summertime.
It was a lot of the same in the worst sense, but a lot was dramatically different in the sense of just continuation and worsening of all the conditions that in the summertime I thought couldn't get any worse, but they did, and that includes the overall conditions of the people there, their living conditions, the hospitals, the supplies, the equipment. Everything that seemed to be at a critical point in the summer, obviously over the next 3 months, nothing improved. There was no aid coming in. There was nothing else that would suggest that it would improve. So everything just got dramatically worse.
Yeah.
So it was pretty noticeable.
Yeah. And that's from a point where you thought it couldn't get any worse, as you say. I should say to people and should warn people that some of the detail of this discussion you might find a little bit distressing, obviously. I know that you went to Gaza. Just before you went to Gaza, Nabil, this time you published an editorial in the New York Times where you highlighted really horrific detail of cases of sniper fire to the heads of young children.
That's right. There were 65 medical workers who contributed to that piece. It was by Dr. Sidwell, a trauma surgeon here in the United States. It was published in the New York Times, had a significant amount of attention, I think. It was very eye-opening for a lot of people. Even though this same issue has been described in detail since the spring, but it was the first time that everyone kind of got together and said that this is a consensus, that everyone's witnessing this and seeing this. And it's, this is something that among many, many, many lines that have been crossed and war crimes committed, that there's no defense for this and there's no justification or accidental, reasoning for this. When you're seeing sniper bullets in children's heads. And, to me, there's not a distinct line between that and dropping a bomb on a school knowing there's kids inside, but there is a very, very clear mark of intention in this. And the really, really shocking part, Cormac, was when I went back. This was just before I went back in October when the piece was published.
Yeah.
When I went back, you would think, okay, there would be some kind of restraint from that specific type of thing you see, but there were six additional cases in October that we saw with sniper bullets again to young kids, direct shots to the head, single shots. And so it continued on even despite publicity for it, which is even more concerning, because yeah, the impunity is really, really just unbelievable.
How young?
The last one I saw was a 4-year-old girl.
Oh, Jesus.
And all of these were preteen children that were described in the piece that was published, and the ones that were in October as well.
And the other one, the other issue that you mentioned there, you say it's as bad as dropping a bomb on a school. That's happened as well when you were there.
Yeah, that's happened several times, and twice, at least twice, in the 2 months that I was there. And this idea that the local people and children are being used as human shields, it's just not what we saw. Every one of these events where bombs were being dropped and there were mass casualty events on a daily or every other day basis, all you saw were women and children and innocent young men. And that was it. There was no militants. There was nobody hiding behind these people. And in the last, on my last mission, a school was bombed. 17 people were killed. Kids came into the ER just littered across the floor, and these are young kids, some of them in diapers. with terrible, terrible wounds and injuries. And these are the ones who survived. And there was no, people hiding behind them in the school. There were no military targets or anything like that. So there was absolutely no, what we hear from the other side is just not what we're seeing there on the ground. And unfortunately, we're the only ones who can actually report that as the medical workers there. But it's consensus. Every single person I've talked to from all around the world that has been there is giving the same message, telling the same story, and refuting the same claims repeatedly.
And could that be, no, I'm not even going to ask that question. I mean, can you talk about the resilience of the population, I wonder? I mean, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no, it's a.
I'm finding the images that you're describing, they're just completely difficult to take, and this is completely unprofessional. I'm so sorry. But I mean, just, I cannot get the image of a child in diapers out of my head coming in after a bombing or a sniper to the head of a child who's 4. I just don't understand. I mean,
Well, Cormac, I
as a
mean, you.
medical, as a clinician, how you do it. I mean, I just, and or how the Gazans do it. I just don't understand how it's possible.
I don't either. And having spent a significant amount of time with them, especially the medical workers, I still can't describe what kind of human beings these are. And you're clearly a human being, and this is how every single person in the world should be reacting to this. So you can imagine the shock and frustration that when we tell these stories and people. Nothing happens, nothing changes. And from my standpoint, it's, as a medical worker, you learn to try to compartmentalize things when you're dealing with horrible things like this, just so you can keep taking care of people. But unfortunately, because we are also the journalists and witnesses there, we can't do that. And I can tell you, every single person I've talked to coming back is broken. I mean, there's no way around it. This is not something that anybody can handle. And when we watch the local people there doing this, seeing this, living this for over a year now, I have no explanation as to how they're able to. And the resilience is an interesting word because they're often described that way. I hesitate using the word because it almost undermines what they're going through, because it's as if someone goes through something difficult and we say, oh, they're very patient, so it's easier for them. And so this certainly is no easier for them than anybody else, but they have no choice. And the strength that they have to continue going, it's unbelievable. I really can't describe it. And I can tell you one of the most disheartening things for me from the summertime, it was the first time I had gone. It was shocking. There's an adjustment period to actually see what you're seeing, because we've all heard the stories, videos, pictures, but when you're there, it's beyond comprehension. And so once you're getting through that adaptation phase, you're looking to the local people to guide you. How do I function in this as a doctor in the hospital, in this depleted system? And they continue going. Mass casualty event. They get through it and they go to the next day and the next day. And this time when I went October, there was a helplessness in their faces and hopelessness that I had never witnessed before. And
Really,
that was very, very, very disheartening.
and that in itself, Dr. Rana, is disheartening, is it? As you say, that the fact that they may be losing hope here. Are there safe areas? So when they're asked to evacuate by Israel and Israeli forces, we're told that by other doctors that there are no safe areas. They try to leave and they're shot at, or there's missile fire. In
Yeah,
your
there's not at
experience,
all.
is there?
There's not at all. And I actually witnessed myself, even with my own eyes, is that, 90% of the population has been forcibly displaced. And I'm going to say that very clearly, because there's argument about every term that we use, but 100% forcibly displaced to these very, very tight and small areas along the coast in tents where there's no facilities, nothing that you can actually use to live. And they've been doing that for a year. And these are the safe zones. These are where they're told to go. And those areas are continuously bombed, continuously attacked. And so when someone evacuates their home or their tent, and some of these people have been displaced 8, 9 times and told to go somewhere else, there is never any understanding that we're going to go there to be safe. It's just we're going somewhere else where we'll likely get killed. And that's happening on a daily basis. And so when you talk about safe zones, the hospital I worked at, Al-Aqsa Hospital, a hospital has been bombed 8 times on the hospital grounds in the past year, which is a hospital that's not invaded. It's not labeled as a military target. It's where actual physicians, medical aid workers, foreign aid workers, patients, displaced families, people are actually living, including myself. I was living there. And so when you say that what constitutes a safe zone is every single, like I said, every single red line that can be crossed is crossed and repeatedly.
Do you think you'll go back, Dr. Nabil Rana?
You know, the helplessness that every single aid worker feels when they come back here is so profound. And to go back and into the horrible, horrible things that you witness there is such a contradiction, but it's almost universal that every person I've talked to, the only ease they get from coming back is the thought of returning to help, because that's the only time that you feel like you can actually show these people that some of us care, that they're not alone.
Yeah. And it's
that the whole world hasn't given up on them. And that's what they see. They see the entire world has turned their back on them. And to see that hopeless, like I said, it's absolutely crushing.
Look, if this conversation proves anything, it just shows that it's so difficult to discuss this type of human suffering, but it's important to document this human suffering as well. We'll talk again soon. Thanks a million for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Cormac. Thanks for having me. I appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you. That's Dr. Nabil Rana, who's returned from his second Med Global volunteer mission to work in hospitals in Gaza.